Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to episode 4 of season 2 of the Broker Breakdown with myself and Mike. Mike, looking out the window today, it's our favorite time of year and the snow's falling, and I'm just thinking, you know what? I think golf is going to be a few more months away.
We finally get in a little bit, eh? A little bit of this, the white stuff, finally.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan. I've never been a big fan of winter, so the less white stuff we get, the better, so...
It's been a very odd winter in Southern Ontario. We had that massive snowfall
in November.
We had that same little bit around Christmas, but then everything has just been melting. We haven't had that stable snow on the ground, above below freezing temperatures where we just get like that base. We haven't had that yet.
I'm perfectly fine with it. But looking outside today, I'm like getting a little bit like anxiety. I'm like, you know what? Like golf season is still so far away.
To be expected. Don't jump the gun by any means.
I did jump the gun. I bought new irons yesterday.
Well, you can put those in the closet and wait for either the simulators to be on rocking, or you can go down south for a trip and do some golfing that way.
I know. I went to the simulator last week, I believe, with a few buddies of mine, so we'll definitely get into some more of those. And I know we talked about that possibly going as well, but I just need to bring them in and clean them off today, just to kind of make sure they're all like nice and good. They look great. I just kind of like to wipe them down, because again, someone else is like, they've been at someone else's house and touched by them, so I just want to make sure they're all clean and ready for me to use. So
for sure.
Yeah, but for today we are kind of going to go into the topic of the what we call in the insurance industry as the hard market of insurance. So kind of just a very quick overview of what that really means. The hard market insurance is basically just for consumers. I would say it's more of a negative, because again, a lot of companies in a hard market are basically putting on a lot of restrictions and more underwriting rules in regards to basically trying to get clients. So to basically move your insurance, and you might be looking at higher premiums, less options to go to certain companies, because again, companies have put in more restrictions and rules during a hard market, basically in a plain English term, basically being closed for business. On the opposite side of things, when we're in a soft market, again, plain English, almost open for business. Companies have reduced restrictions, reduced rules. They want business. They want you to come. So basically in that kind of stance is they almost decrease premiums to basically make it more competitive for them for clients to move over to their companies. So kind of how that kind of pertains to the market right now, with it, us being in a hard market, kind of some factors that go into a hard market basically happening, and kind of our predictions moving into 2023 and maybe a few years down the road. So Mike, like, we've been in this hard market for, who knows how long. Like, I think ever since I've been in the industry, almost 6 years now, is like, that's all I've heard realistically is we're in this hard market. And then I guess some experts have been saying that we're starting to stabilize. I don't know, like, do you really see that happening right now? Like, do you see stabilizing, or do you still see us still being in that very hard market where we really don't want this unless it's really squeaky clean?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both, right? It's a gray area for sure. I know that there was conversations back prior to COVID about things tightening up at the time, and then it kind of just got wrapped into those couple years of COVID where... insurance companies were giving some breaks, right? There was a couple of discounts here and there, and there was some COVID relief programs in place by a number of different insurers, and just overall premium reductions or slight reductions to help compensate for that. But that was more of a short-term kind of band-aid in essence, right? It was, how can we help sustain some part of our books, and what can we do to, keep as many clients as possible? So it's been certainly a couple of years that I've heard that kind of that term thrown around, right? Or what we've been part of. And there's two aspects, right? We've talked about this before, me and you, but there's the premium side. So what you pay as a client for your insurance every month, or what your total year is, depending on how you pay. And there's the underwriting side, which is basically what the insurance companies are willing to accept, kind of what their guidelines are, how their appetites line up, and how easy it is for us as brokers to do business with them on the day. So, I mean, to answer that part of the question, James, I think that's been tightening for the couple of years, right? Because in my experience, when you make phone calls to the company partners, I mean, I've been doing this now for almost a decade, and I feel like you get some pushback on what seems to be a very, very relatively clean, good from the looks, profitable risk, right? We all know things can happen, but you might have other insight as well. But I just find that we're getting more pushback from the underwriting departments at different insurance, partnerships that we have for kind of, they're looking at different criteria than we are with respect to profitability.
100%. There's always, from a broker standpoint, like I look at risks all the time and I'm like, you know what? This is so clean. Like there's no way no one's going to want this. And then you go and like do quotes or whatever. And then you're like, wow, like literally like almost no one wants this. So like I said, we've been in this market for, like I said, I've been in the industry for almost 6 years now. And like, I think ever since I've been in the industry, I've always heard this term being thrown around, hard market. So it'd be nice to almost get into a soft market to kind of see what that really means, what that really looks like, especially.
I was part of one. I was part of what, in my opinion, what was softer in the earlier stages of entering the industry, where certain companies would be very competitive. And you would notice a couple specific ones where, almost anything you had risk-wise that was clean or relatively clean, their pricing was amazing. Right, I won't name names, but like where you could place, every four risks, two or three of them could go to a specific company. So I've seen a part of that in my past.
Yeah, and kind of getting into some factors on why this really happens. I think the biggest one, and like hold the shock factor here, but obviously the state of the economy is obviously going to be a massive factor into why we see a hard market. Our inflation numbers have been at record highs for at least the last year. So again, kind of how do we see the economy really impacting the hard market for insurance?
Yeah. I mean, the word, like you mentioned before, kind of stabilization. I think companies a lot of brokers have probably seen prices on new risks be quite a bit higher than maybe what they expected in the past. And this is just a way of the companies kind of now figuring out of a post-COVID world where their prices need to be in order to kind of remain, profitable moving forward. So it's very simple. It's how do we ensure we keep getting business, but we're not either vastly overpriced or vastly underpriced, right? Where you're taking on either everything or nothing. There's always that kind of, there's always that teeter-totter in a sense about how do you find that perfect middle spot, right? So we're going to see a lot of more stabilization where I think in general, you'll see a lot of companies know what they want as a client, but everyone's very consistent in their pricing. And that might happen for whatever this kind of recession period looks like. I'm not sure the length of time. Only time will tell, James, and hopefully it's not years. Hopefully it's shorter, but then I'm not an economist by any means. This is just hopefully me saying as in a general perspective. I hope we all don't lose our shirts in this.
Yeah, because an article that you actually pointed out to me today actually was the one where it was saying that that basically once a recession is triggered, you're around 135 to 140% like income to debt ratio. And the article that you showed me this morning, a Canadian underwriter was saying that Canadian households right now are around 169% debt to income ratio. So for us to not technically say that we're in a recession is almost like insane to think, because most recessions are triggered at about 130 to 140%. And again, they're saying that Canadian households are at about 169%. So we're almost 30% more than what a recession should be triggered at. So
right.
I thought that was a very alarming number that I like that technically, like I said, economists can say that we're not in a recession. I personally don't agree. Like, I think we've been in a recession probably in the last 6 months or so, if you're just looking at what's really going on in at least the Canadian economy. Things just aren't really, again, inflation's at all-time highs. Our interest rate for mortgages have increased significantly. New car interest rates have increased significantly. Again, for us to really sit here and say that we're not in a recession is almost like crazy to think. But again, we're not economists. So it's crazy to look at these numbers and say that we're not in one.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing I'll point out too is when we look at those, and it's not fully insurance, but when we look from like debt to income ratios, I mean, if the average Canadian, very averagely put, is already at about 170%, which is more than 1.5 times what they make annually, there's got to be, you know, not everyone can weather that storm, to put it lightly. So we'll have to see what that turns out like. One of the big things is, like, you know, disposable income at that point. So it means that more people then are budgeting based on their monthly bills and doing far, far less. So in my opinion, that means putting less money back into the economy because they're going to be relying on other assistance programs and whatnot as well. So, I mean, how does that affect insurance? And to bring that back to our podcast and the insurance side of things, I think what we're going to see from a client perspective and what clients should look out for is just keeping a closer idea on what they're paying for insurance. So you might see a very stable renewal this year, similar to what you paid last year, maybe a little bit of an increase, but it's not necessarily the end of the world. That might just become the norm, where over the next year or 2 years of renewals, insurance is very much the same or with slight increases. I don't think you're going to see reductions very much unless you're a client with a specific company that they want super long-term, which there are appetites that look like that. But it's going to be more stabilization, and then hopefully we don't I guess time will tell, James, is what I'll leave that off on that point.
Yeah, I'm kind of relating this to an article actually posted by Economical Insurance, but basically how this really impacts it from a consumer prospect. So they basically have three different kind of like factors. I'll kind of give you guys the cold notes on them, but basically how this impacts consumers during a hard market. So option one is basically your options are obviously limited for insurance. So obviously during hard markets, we already kind of explained this, that companies tend to enforce stricter rules, more underwriting guidelines, stuff like that. So in cases where you're trying to shop your policy, you might have less options to basically go to. Option two is you also might have less options to renew and even make changes to your policy, because again, if they're making stricter guidelines to new policies, those guidelines are probably going to trickle down into existing policies or renewing policies. So again, coverages, limit of coverage, if you're trying to increase stuff, they might not be able to do that, because again, in a hard market, if they're putting hard rules on stuff, they're probably not going to change that stance unless we kind of soften or stabilize. And then the third thing, again, Mike kind of alluded to this. We kind of have also talked about it throughout the episode so far. But again, increase in premiums. You're not going to obviously massive increases, but you probably will see a little bit here and there over the next few years as the market tries to stabilize, as we try to get out of this hard market. But again, don't be shocked if you're looking at your renewal and you go, oh, it went up $50 or it went up $100. Like, that is kind of what you're going to see in this market, especially in a hard market, right? So just those are three things that would kind of affect you on the consumer side of things, especially in this hard market. Again, as being a broker, you can always call whoever you deal with and kind of see what your options are. Again, with the more options you have, the better chance of you being able to move on renewal, which is nice. It's just, again, making sure that you have that relationship with your broker to basically ask them and say, hey, you know what? I had questions about this. My renewal has gone up X amount. Is there an option that we can move? And again, if your broker can reshop you and possibly move you to a different market, great, save you some money. If not, then like I said, at the end of the day, like, this is the market conditions that we're in. So again, it's never guaranteed that you will save money. But again, if you have the broker that has the options, you possibly can move you to a different market, then always an option for you on renewal.
Yeah, and the one other the point that I wanted to make, kind of sideways to that, but what happens in kind of volatile markets and more recessionary terms is a few very specifics, right, to how it affects both the home and the auto industry. One of which being cost of building materials. I think we've seen this now for a while that the cost of overall rebuilding for claims and home materials has gone up and skyrocketed. So the overall cost and how that affects your insurance policy on the home means your rebuilding cost is going to be higher, right? So with higher rebuilding cost, typically in general, and every company is a little different, the higher the replacement cost on your home, the higher you pay or the more you pay on your insurance premium. That's usually a very standard. The other thing that we've mentioned in a couple of different episodes is vehicle parts pricing and sourcing. So most of us, if you've gotten your vehicle either repaired from somebody you know or from a local shop, is that parts in general are harder to get and they also take longer. So they might be more expensive. There's a shortage on how long you can get them in. So it could be weeks, if not months. I've heard a couple of articles where it's been months, which is crazy, but it's not surprising. And then on top of that, you're going to have labor rates, right? So overall labor rate increases, and then you're going to see a shortage possibly in the workforce as well. Like there's a lot of different things that happen, right? Supply chain issues. Overall, homeowner maintenance, James, is a big one, right? So going into more of like those kind of harder, tougher recessionary times, as consumers, when you start cutting certain things in your life, maintenance typically takes a hit because maintenance is usually a proactive thing, right? We're trying to stay on top of brakes or a furnace or our roof. And when we have that disposable income, we can do it to increase the value of our properties or our cars. And we kind of keep at that stable level. But when you're in a time where it's between, you know, food on the table or the water leak in the roof, right? I'm not making that decision, but I know what a lot of people would pick for the family. So yeah, those are a couple of things that I think are going to become, we're going to see some changes in a few of those points here as time goes on.
Yeah. And kind of relating back to the economical article that they posted too, something that I know we did an episode, actually, we've done two episodes actually on weather events and natural disasters, but they said another massive factor into how the hard market is kind of impacted is weather events and like natural disasters. So I also read another article actually posted by Stats Canada for last year, so 2022. They said 2022 was the biggest year, over $3 billion in relief to basically like weather damage and natural disaster damages in Canada. So
wow.
That alone, like I know we've done two episodes on it. We did how climate basically changes, how that infects insurance. And we also did when Hurricane Fiona kind of hit the East Coast there, we did an episode on that. So if you guys haven't listened to it, go check those two episodes out from season one. But again, just from like Hurricane Fiona, when we talked about it, they were estimating about a $300 million basically damage bill at that time. So again, if insurance companies are basically having to deal with more weather related claims, which again, we have seen. And again, if you go back even in our kind of neck of the woods, the whole Barry tornado that again, they estimated that at $100 million in damage. And I believe it's still growing at this point. I think the last article I saw, they were at $150 million. So again, massive things like that, of course, are going to put more of a damper on the market, because again, if we're hitting all time highs, which Stats Canada did say it was an all time high for basically damages caused by weather in Canada ever, you will see obviously the markets are going to have to put more stricter rules on stuff, right? They can't continue to have years where, again, you can't obviously change weather, Mike, but again, you can kind of put rules around where, you know what, like we don't want that kind of business. Maybe we have to increase that business to make it profitable. Because again, if there's going to be more storms, and even like look at like Niagara on the Lake, have you seen those like pictures and stuff from the homes that are like fully encased in ice? a few weeks ago. Did you see those?
You talking about the one from like the kind of the Christmas storm
like,
there?
Yeah, where like the whole like waterfront in Niagara on the lake and like Lake Erie and stuff were just fully like encased in like inches of ice.
Yeah, I saw a few photos that were pretty wild for sure.
And again, that's damaging to your home, right? So how many claims do you think that the industry is going to see just from that alone, right? So again, another massive, massive factor to why a hard market exists is because, again, we're still combating these climate change weather events that we still are seeing record numbers to this day. And every year we're seeing more and more damage caused by weather.
Yeah, and you know what? There's another aspect too, which is as we keep getting more, you know, more advanced in technology, I'll say, and gathering data from claims and whatnot. I know that it's very early in the stages, but there's articles out there and different things that talk about how there's different ways to rate auto insurance, right? More specifically, so it might be based on. For a long time, it's been race. Gender. It's been gender, right? It's always just been an application, whether it's, you know, are you male or female or whatnot. But I've also heard very small conversations in different articles about different areas and race and all that type of stuff as well.
I saw that article.
It's a different topic altogether.
And I saw that article on Canadian Underwriter where they said that is race a possible thing that you can could rate for? And I was like, oh, we're kind of getting this little touchy subject here of of like, as a broker, how am I going to ask someone what your race is? Like, that is like,
yeah,
you're opening up a can of worms that you don't want to open up. Or again, we already have that issue where the gender thing's now becoming an issue where like a lot of companies are kind of going away from rating on gender. But again, like there's no way that they can implement race into insurance factoring. That's literally like going the opposite way that they want to go in.
Yeah, it's very specified, and the problem that I see with it is then you're kind of breaking down a substrata of people and saying you're being penalized because of the small few instead. So in general, insurance is the losses of the many. The losses of the few, as I say that backwards, the losses of the few are spread among the many, right? So we have this monster insurance pool of money from all drivers. And then from there, you know, we all pay premiums in order to cover those losses of the few people. But if you break it down even further, and this is where it's very touchy and something that I guess insurance companies will look at behind the scenes, but it's not for me and James to make comments on. Is that if you're doing it by race as well, all the data from claims, you're now breaking down that substrata of the losses of the many to the few. Now you're doing even a smaller group or a smaller pool and then still paying out the losses from a specific pool, right? So I don't know how that would work. And I guess that's a very, very hopefully down the line thing. I don't know if that will ever come around or if that's just a talking point that's being thrown around to see where what's like. But yeah, That's touchy for sure.
The last kind of point I wanted to make in regards to like kind of how some factors into the hard market. Again, another episode that we did, insurance fraud episode. Again, if you haven't checked that out, season one, go check it out. But again, just a higher level of insurance fraud. And again, something that the industry has to combat every single day is that people just want to lie about their insurance. And I don't understand. I see it all the time. Like I'm in so many like groups online. I'm in so many like kind of like communities, and I've had clients do it as well. And I just don't understand why you pay for a product, but you aren't honest about what you actually have. And then you think that the product's going to protect you when you haven't been honest when you bought the product. Like this might be a little bit, kind of like not really a big red flag, but again, I'm a truck driver. So I know a lot of people drive trucks. They lift their trucks, bigger rims, bigger, all this kind of stuff, right? but they don't tell their insurance companies that they have lifted trucks, bigger rims, bigger tires. And again, they might not see that as being a big issue. Personally, I don't see it as being a big issue. But then you start getting to these like cold air intakes, muffler deletes, all this kind of stuff. But again, they don't tell their insurance company. But then at the event of you being in an accident, the insurance company then obviously gets a report back from the body shop. And the body shop goes, oh, they have all this aftermarket parts on. Of course, they're not going to pay out a claim because you didn't tell them that you had all this stuff on your vehicle. But then again, people are like, well, why? Like, I had insurance, but you didn't have the right insurance. You didn't tell your broker agent that you had this stuff done to your vehicle, because most of the time, these things that are done to the vehicle are usually going to increase the value of the vehicle. Again, not a massive difference. Like, I'm not really, this is obviously not like the biggest like thing of fraud on planet Earth, but it's still technically not telling the truth to your insurance that you have these things done to your vehicle.
Yeah. You know what? That brings up a good point that in the times that we're coming with as well, and what we're already kind of living through, more and more claims may or may not be declined depending on how we trend based on what's been disclosed, right? So when times get tougher, it's even more important to ensure that you're, what you have is what you, you know, what you know you have is what you have, but also that everything, even if it seems minor to you, is disclosed or discussed, right? And that goes both ways. That goes from the client if they know something specific and they're not mentioning it, but it also goes to both agents, brokers, and everyone in our space, ensuring we're asking the right questions and kind of knowing our client, right? Making sure you know what to ask on the car and home insurance or renter insurance or whatever it might be to ensure that, you know, there's not a concern in a claim and that you didn't do your due diligence or they didn't do theirs, right? There's that talking point with respect to claims for sure.
And that's why you go to a broker or an agent that you can trust, because again, like, I always give my clients my expert advice on things like this. I say, yes, most of the market, if you look at anyone that drives trucks, most of the time they're going to not tell their insurance broker or their insurance agent that they have things done to their truck. Again, I don't play that side of the game. I said, I would rather bring you to a company that knows that you have these things done, will accept you for having those things done. Yes, you might have to pay a little bit more for your insurance, but at the end of the day, if you get into a claim, they already know that you have these things done to your vehicle. So there's not going to be a, hey, I missed this on your policy, and hey, you have this on your policy. We're not going to basically fix this for you. It basically goes right into, okay, like, we already knew this. It's on the policy. Like, no problem, like, go ahead with it. But again, it all comes down to what you basically want to pay to basically have things covered as a consumer.
Right. Well, and to kind of go off that point, like you mentioned on the fraud side, if there's more of that in the industry in general and companies collect that data or are able to find that out, you're going to see a tightening of what adjusters are asking. So it's an entire industry trend where they'll ask more questions when a claim happens, even if you've done everything the right way, right? Documentation, you've got what happened in the claim, you've kind of done your part. There's going to be messaging to say, hey, we need to do a better job of making sure that we're not just paying out of pocket for something that clearly was done in a malicious way, right? That it was a legitimate, honest, truthful claim. And that's not from our side. That's more from the insurance company partner side for sure, because they're going to be the ones having those conversations. But I see that happening moving forward as well.
100%. Yeah. You're going to see with the marketing tightening up, you're going to see underwriters and claims adjusters and stuff. And they're going to be asking, they're going to be probing for more questions and making sure that things are done correctly. Because again, I think in the age that we're in right now, if they can find any way to like basically not pay things because, or pay out claims because things have maliciously been done, of course they're not going to do. Because again, if they find it's malicious, insurance is not going to pay. But again, if it's an honest mistake, that's a different story. But like once any malicious kind of fraudulent activity comes into play, instantly you're not, it's, I'm guaranteeing it will not get paid out, especially the kind of the route that we're going down where there's so much more investigation, there's so much more technology that goes into it. So again, you could lie, but again, all the technology that we have, it can basically show like how accidents happen, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I think going down the road, Mike, you're completely true. Like those things are going to start to tighten up, and you're going to see that it's when you're basically probing into a claim, there's going to be so many more questions and investigation involved in it that realistically, if you're found to be doing malicious activity, you're guaranteed to not be, you're going to be declined coverage.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what, this might be a good opportunity for those that, you know, are looking for other opinions or want to lean on us as well. If you're looking for new quotes, I we're always happy to provide, you know, there's no obligation to proceed. I love having conversations with people about what's going on for the future for home or auto insurance, making it more about the relationship rather than just that transaction. Because the truth of it is, you can buy insurance from almost anyone. There's lots of, like, you know, click and pay insurers out there. There's lots of online ways to get quotes through third-party vendors. There's lots of ways of being able to get what seems like a very easy transaction for insurance, which a lot of consumers like. So I'm not discrediting that. I think there's a misconception sometimes that brokers either charge more or maybe it takes way too much time to get a quote. The process is too tough or cumbersome or whatever it might be. And I would challenge that, you know, with myself and probably many people in the industry, that that's certainly not the case, right? So maybe as a more of a self-plug feature, you know, 15 minutes as a phone call, you can, I do that with almost anybody regardless, just to say, hey, what's going on? What can I help with? You know, is there something I want? Is it more price-based? You kind of have that discovery call in a sense. And I find that it really holds its weight for the percentage of the population that likes to go a little deeper and they want to make sure they're properly insured, I guess is what I'll leave off on that.
Exactly. Again, a 5 to 10 minute conversation to find you 20, 30 options is a lot better than finding one option and being like, okay, I'm going to go with the first one that I see, right? So again, just doing your due diligence and research before you actually purchase and making sure, again, you're getting that expert advice. I'm not going to go buy a home without a realtor. I'm not going to go get a mortgage without a mortgage broker. So again, using that expert that basically does this for a living is always something that I recommend, instead of just clicking and buying and then hoping that you're protecting yourself the right way without knowing any kind of background of the product.
Well, you know, and you know what? You made a point there I was just thinking about. It's funny how, you know, as consumers, a lot of us would either ask for referrals or do a lot of research to find, you know, the proper mortgage, the proper person. Whether it's you're buying a house, you're typically, you might be looking at somebody you know or asking family or friends who you've used to kind of have it. So it's a big purchase. I don't think insuring a home should be any less of that, right? It's not just part of the transaction. Insuring your home properly is a big process of buying that home and getting that mortgage. So you can, getting in is very exciting, and ensuring you have a competitive mortgage rate is very exciting with the terms of that. But how about ensuring that the insurance you actually have on that big asset, probably one of your largest assets ever, is done effectively, right? And it's not done based on a lower form of coverage, or it's based on, you know, little to no water damage to help on rates. There are ways that the industry cuts corners, I think, in general. I just think that people in general should utilize experts the same way they would for mortgage and or real estate and or lawyers, right? The whole transaction process. I don't think we should be put as just a part of that, as like, you know, the last final step, James, is my say.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of transitioning to the final part of this episode, maybe just kind of throw out some your opinion, your predictions, Mike, of kind of how long do you think that we're going to be in this hard market for? Like, do you see us truly stabilizing, like the articles are saying and all the experts are saying? Do you see this hard market basically going longer than expected, is basically what I'm trying to ask.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's going to know the months, right? Because consumer patterns are really what determine how long it lasts, how many people can kind of weather that storm is going to be a massive talking point over the next, I would say, 12 months. And keep in mind, the one good thing about renewals is they're only a year for home and auto insurance. So we can always relook at things in a year. It's not like it's a 5-year type of window. But what I will say is I don't know the timelines, James. I don't think neither one of us could really pinpoint that. I mean, if we would, I think we'd be super rich right now if we were that smart. But it the hard market, or so how we've called it, going into the kind of stabilization in a sense and not soft by any means, is going to be as long as this process takes with the looming and or possibly imminent recessionary times. I don't think it's going to be any shorter than that. I don't think it's going to be much longer, but it's going to kind of follow a similar trend to however long that, you know, the recessionary time period takes. And that's my best answer I can give.
Yeah. I think as long as the economy is basically in a state of turmoil, which it is basically right now, and inflation numbers are through the roof, and like you pointed out, the debt to income ratio is through the roof, higher than what a recession should trigger at, I think you're going to see a hard market for years to come, to be honest with you. I can't see how the economy that we're in right now, again, not an economist, but again, we do see a lot of stats. I read a lot of articles, and just, again, how the market is right now, I don't see how this is a Band-Aid fix. I don't see how we turn around and go, you know what, this is going to be fixed in 6 months, 12 months. This is going to be years upon years of trying to fix an economy that has been broken for years prior to COVID. Don't get me wrong, this is not because of COVID. This is prior to COVID, but COVID kind of just shot it off the cliff. We were hanging by a thread on the cliff, and then COVID just cut it, and we just are sky falling right to the ground. So, and again, like, that's not even just one, that's just one factor. Again, if you look at other factors that we talked about throughout the episode, with weather and insurance fraud and all that kind of stuff, and even if you want to go by it, if you want to go by theft, look how big theft has been. And I know that's another episode that we've talked about in the past, but again, the level of theft in Canada in the last 2 to 3 years is skyrocketed. The amount of vehicles that are being stolen, broken into, are just through the roof. So all these major factors combined with these minor factors are now causing us to basically put more rules and restrictions on insurance. And like I said, I don't see this changing, maybe stabilizing. I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence if I agree with stabilizing. I don't know. I personally think it gets worse before it gets better. I don't think it stabilizes, but I think we're still years away for us to kind of get into that, what we call a soft market. And then consumers are going to basically see massive reductions on their insurance, or companies basically opening what we call opening up for business, and basically taking on almost every kind of risk. That's just my personal opinion, Mike.
Yeah, through my experience, the one thing that I would love to get to is get to a space where the broker relationship with the insurance companies is based on a level of trust as well, which is basically our entire selling point, right? If we trust our clients as the first part of the interaction, and we do the proper due diligence, asking questions to do a very strongly educated guess on their risk and who they are, and then we convey that information properly to the insurance companies, it should be very much back and forth where they say, yeah, this is the type of price that you should be getting for them, and the underwriting should be very minimal, in my opinion. Now, with trends and fraud and, you know, everyone kind of tightening their, I don't even know what the word is, they're tightening their boots, I guess. I'm not sure if that's what it is. Anyways, tightening your belts, maybe. When you start tightening things up, everyone is affected. So the client's affected, the broker and agent side is affected. So that frontline person doing the sales and the service, the insurance company is affected. We all are together. So it's a very fine balancing act between consumer trends and things that are happening, insurance company trends, and what, you know, are they making money versus not? And we're kind of in the middle, right, as the broker in that sense. So I would love to see it get back to a spot where there's more trust in that entire process, that I saw about in the early portions of my insurance career. So that might come down the channel again, and when it does, I'll know it, because it'll be very obvious when, you know, they're open for business and you get asked less questions. I apologize. And then we'll also be writing a lot more business, because that relationship will go a lot further as well, especially on the education side. So that's my final thought on all that.
Yeah. Great points. And again, I guess like we always say, time will tell, but we're kind of wrapping things up here. Next week, we will have another guest on the show, Kim Pham from Forest City Mazda in London, Ontario. She's going to come on, kind of talk about how she's kind of made herself successful through her social media. Her social media is amazing. Mike, if you haven't seen it, I would recommend going to look at it before, because the things that she does on social media is so great. But then again, just kind of talking about the auto industry from a different perspective, kind of what Mazda might be doing moving forward as the auto industry and changes. So I'm super excited to have her on and kind of give her, see her viewpoints on things. So yeah, I'm really excited for next week.
Yeah, super excited. Yeah, it'd be great to get another guest on. I think some of our higher viewers are based on our guests too, right? Because we get a little that third person interaction.
Yeah, it's always nice to have another person, because then, like I said, you get another viewpoint, right, that comes in, and another voice on the podcast. So yeah, I'm super excited to have her on. So that will be for next week. But again, make sure you guys are checking out all the episodes. We did launch on YouTube as well. So if you guys want to check that out, go to YouTube. But again, we're on all basic streaming platforms: Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, a bunch of other ones. But again, check out our social media as well. Just that's where we basically post. But if you go to any of your streaming sites, just type in the Broker Breakdown and we should come up. But yeah, again, we appreciate all the people that take the time to listen. I know it's you guys can basically listen to any podcast, and if you guys are listening to ours, we appreciate that. But again, super excited for next week to have Kim on, and just kind of moving forward and getting some more guests on, because that's kind of what our big goal for 2023 was, is to basically have special guests on almost every month. So I know me and Mike are kind of grinding away to ask people and to get people on. So I know the last basically January we had Doug, and then February will basically be Kim. So yeah, I'm just really looking forward to getting more people on the podcast as we kind of grow.
Love it. But can't wait for more people to come on as well, because it's great to have other opinions too and interactions.
Exactly. But thank you guys for tuning in, and we will check you guys next week on the Broker Breakdown.